Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
You know, it's estimated that about 200 million Christians around the world suffer for their faith. They're wrongly accused, they're falsely arrested, they languish in prisons, they're even tortured. Some of the most oppressed of those are Muslims who become followers of Jesus. Al Jansen has co-written this book called Secret Believers, which describes what many of these Muslim folk go through when they decide to follow Christ. Quite fascinating. Al, welcome to Australia and welcome to Open House.
Thank you, Sheridan. It's great to be with you.
I hope you're enjoying our country.
I love Australia, only we've had to... my wife and I were kind of laughing about how many beds we've slept in since we came here. You know, we've been in six cities in 2 weeks, so I feel like I've seen more airports than Australia.
Say, you must love our airports.
And actually, they are very nice airports, yes.
Well, this is quite a fascinating topic, the whole idea of secret believers, these folks that are suffering immense persecution simply for naming the name, as Christians might say, naming the name of Jesus, owning the name of Jesus.
Right.
Do you have any statistics as to how many, particularly Muslim folks, are becoming followers of Jesus year on year? Any idea?
No, actually, it's hard because, as you say, many of them are secret believers. In fact, we have one character in the book who's a politician in the government that we tell the story in an unnamed Middle East country, so I don't reveal where this is. But there are a lot of people like him who never actually openly identify themselves as followers of Jesus. They remain Muslim. They remain in their family and in their culture and continue to live out their faith in a rather secretive way. Mm. We do know, though, in one Muslim country of about 400,000 people who have identified themselves as followers of Christ, and another Muslim country where 250,000 people we can confidently say are following Jesus, which probably means there's a lot more that have not openly identified themselves.
And when you say they remain Muslim, you mean that they culturally remain Muslim.
They culturally remain Muslim. In some cases, they will continue to go to the mosque. They will continue to outwardly perform the prayers. They may meet with other Muslim believers, other followers of Jesus, but as far as their culture and their family is concerned, they remain Muslim.
All right, well, that raises a whole heap of questions that we need to explore.
And I'm not sure I even know how to explain all that. It's a complex area. There are many Muslims, the many that I have interviewed have definitely left Islam. In fact, I've met two imams who have become followers of Christ. And it's important that I distinguish. You're probably hearing me say Muslims who become followers of Jesus rather than saying become Christians, because there's a lot of negative connotation with the term Christian. As you know, Islam does not separate its faith from its politics or its faith from its culture. In Christianity, we have separation of politics from church and so on. Mm. So it's important to say that Muslims are becoming followers of Jesus, not necessarily that they're taking on all of the trappings of what we consider Christianity.
Interesting. Or Christendom, as we might also use the word,
right,
as well. Uh-huh. Okay, quite fascinating. We need to mention, of course, that you work with Open Doors, a very well-known organization that supports the persecuted church, the Christians around the world who are suffering again for I guess owning that name. Okay, well, I'm quite fascinated about these people and if their choice to follow Jesus. Tell me about some of the more dramatic encounters with God that some of these folks have had. Why are they becoming followers?
Now, that's very interesting. From the research I've done, over 90% of Muslims who become followers of Jesus have never had a contact with a Western Christian.
90%?
Yeah. It's huge. More than half of them, by my personal interviews, begin the journey with a dream or a vision. Jesus appears to them. The appearance of Christ, the picture of Christ, is identical for all of them, but the way that he appears to them or what he does with them is unique. So, for example, with a man who was a mullah, he was in a river, raging river, and he was drowning. And this man rides up on a horse, reaches down, pulls him out of the river, and saves his life. And the mullah says, "Well, why did you save me?" And he says, "Because I wanted to." "And who are you?" "Well, I am Jesus. I'm the one you really seek." Hmm. So that vision or dream starts them on a journey. And from my interviews, it takes a minimum of 2 years and often as long as 5 years for them to become convinced that they must totally surrender their heart to Jesus. So it's not a quick process. Often, one of the things that surprised me is that many Muslims, after the vision, become more committed to their Islamic faith. It's like, okay, I need to be much more religious. But at the same time, they get a copy of the scriptures and they start reading the Injil. The Muslim word for gospels is Injil. Mm-hmm. They start reading the stories of Jesus. They read of his miracles. They read of his teachings. They're blown away with the contrast between what Jesus taught and what their understanding was of Jesus before. Mm-hmm. And in time, they realize, I want to give my heart to him. Now, of course, the other aspect of this, as you know, is they have to count the cost because they know, I mean, even if they're discovered just reading the Bible out of curiosity, the family can often come down very harshly on them. Yeah. and beat them and say, you have 3 days to come back to Islam or we'll kill you. So they do not make a hasty decision.
Yeah.
It's very, very much they count the cost. They don't have to have the dream. The dream or vision is really the starting point. I have not personally met anyone who became a follower of Christ simply from the dream or vision. It only points them in the right direction.
That's fascinating. This is Open House right across Australia. We're talking to Al Jensen and with Brother Andrew, a well-known name you probably might have heard of, who was very well known for the book years ago called God Smuggler. He's written this book called Secret Believers about particularly Muslim folks who have chosen to become followers of Jesus. I remember a friend of mine who did a lot of study on Islam, he said when he did studies into Western converts to Islam, it was predominantly based on knowledge. It was based on, I'm searching for something more than what I've actually found. Mm-hmm. And when they went into Islam, they found an intellectual faith. And they found something that at that stage satisfied what they were looking for.
That's right.
And then he went on to explore how Muslim folks were becoming Christians. And just as you mentioned there, a good deal was actually through supernatural means.
The supernatural is one aspect of it. I think a major aspect, though, is how dramatically different Jesus is from all the other prophets. Because Jesus is generally considered the second most revered prophet in Islam. Mm. But when you really get to know Jesus, you know, the Quran mentions Jesus. I understand that he's mentioned more than Prophet Muhammad in the Quran. But it's very limited. It's, you know, Jesus healed people. Jesus gave sight to the blind. Jesus raised the dead. But none of the stories are in there. So when Muslims actually start reading the Injil and start realizing, here's what Jesus did, that really blows them away. And then you contrast it with, you know, you talk about the miraculous. Jesus talking about loving your enemies. Well, that's a dramatic contrast to what they've been taught. One of the things that really blows them away, several of the converts that I interviewed said they stopped cold when they read the story of the woman caught in adultery. Mm-hmm. And how Jesus said, let you who is without sin cast the first stone. Some of them that I interviewed have seen women stoned for committing adultery. And so this really shakes them. Here's this holy prophet who forgives that lady.
Radical forgiveness.
It's radical. So it really shakes them up. And then, of course, you come to the point of the crucifixion. And this is where the dividing line is. Mm. You know, was Jesus really crucified? You know, that's Islam says, no, someone took his place. We believe that Jesus actually did die. He was crucified, he was buried, he was rose again from the dead. Well, they have to consider that evidence. I have a character in the book, a man named Mustafa, who actually was involved in a radical Muslim fundamentalist movement. He burned down a church as a kid. He would rob from Christian businesses. But he got enamored with the person of Jesus, and he started asking all of these questions. And it was a long journey, but he eventually was convinced that Jesus is the greatest prophet because mm-hmm. he's unique. He's without sin, which even the Quran admits. Mm-hmm. Jesus is the one who was sinless. He died for me. He rose again. I have to decide what I'm going to do with that. Mm-hmm. And Mustafa finally gives in after a long struggle.
Then comes the cost for so many of these folks. So yes. Some of these stories that you've talked about here, again, stories that are real stories with different names and some of the details changed right. So that the innocent may remain safe in some
way. Yeah, I don't want to give away the ending because you fall in love with these characters. But yes, they do pay a high price. I will say this. One of the characters, Ahmed, is in hiding right now. There was a murder of a couple of Christians, and the police in that country wanted to pin it on him, even though he was nowhere near the area that it occurred. It could not have been him. But they're not going to accuse the Muslim fundamentalists in there that actually did it because of the political turmoil. Mm. So, this is the kind of diabolical persecution that it can occur where actually the police are against you, the legal system turns against you. And so Ahmed is in hiding. He can't freely go about and carry on his life. His wife is very fearful and battling depression. These are real human beings who are not, they're my heroes, but at the same time, they do suffer and they do go through depression and they do get discouraged. Mm. And Ahmed's battling that right now. And that's one of the things that we keep telling, keep the story going on our website, secretbelievers.org, so people can continue to follow what's happening to these characters that they've read about in the book.
Yeah. They do pay so much for, again, simply choosing to follow this person of Jesus. And so also you've got to ask yourself then, if they are willing to pay that kind of price, he must be worth it.
He must be worth it, and that's exactly right. And the thing that excites me about these brothers, and I've met so many of them, and is the passion that they have for sharing their faith.
What is the response from family members, typically, for a Muslim who chooses to become the follower of Jesus?
Initially, very negative. Ahmed, when it's discovered that he's not even sure he's a Christian yet, he's not even sure that he's following Jesus, but they find out about it and they beat him and they want him to come back to Islam. And so it's really intense. But in time, if we can protect them long enough that they get grounded in their faith and family members can begin to see the change in their lives, then on the flip side, the strongest witness to their faith in Christ comes to the family members. Mm. The worst persecution comes from the family, but also the greatest fruit will come from the family if allowed enough time to demonstrate that.
Yes, okay. Which is why there should be folks that actually stand in the gap and say, well, we are going to protect you. We're going to protect anybody. Actually, this is a basic human rights issue. You should not be in any way persecuted for your faith, whether it's Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, whatever it
might be. In many of these countries, the law says very clearly you are free to choose your faith. In reality, in Islamic countries, what it means is you're free to choose Islam. And all we're saying is, sure, I've been invited to become a Muslim. Mm. I'm not offended by that in the least. Mm. If you really believe it, try and convince me. Show me. I have no problem with that. Just give me the freedom to show you why I love Jesus. If you don't want to follow that, if you don't believe that, if you don't want to listen to me, that's fine. But if someone wants to ask those questions, I think he should have the right to, and he should have the right to choose for or against Jesus. That's all we're asking.
This is Open House. Al Jensen is our guest. Secret Believers is our topic. Now, before you mention something very, very interesting, that some of these Muslims who become followers of Jesus actually continue to go to the mosque. How does that work theologically? How does that work at a religious level?
Actually, you ask a tough question to which there's no easy answer. It's a very controversial area. There's a whole area called contextualization, and there's a scale from C1 to C6, with C1 being they completely leave their culture and become Christian in every aspect of their practice, to C6, in which they are totally indigenous to Islam and continue to live as a Muslim while having this identification with Christ. And then there's variations in between. Theologically, most people feel that C4 is about the appropriate level, that any further and you become too entwined and it gets mixed up. Certainly, there are aspects of the culture of Islam that there's no reason a person can't continue to be involved in. Mm. So where that line is very hard to understand and to know exactly what is best. I mean, the politician in this book who decides to stay in Islam, God uses him. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that, but you know, you can't ask someone to take a risk that you're not willing to take alongside with him. So how can I ask him to identify himself as a follower of Jesus, knowing that he would lose his position, he would ruin his family, he could very well be killed for that? I think we have to understand that we are not asking them to take on the cultural forms of Christianity. And I think that's the thing. We see churches with spires, and we see vestments, and we see certain kinds of ceremonies. Those are not necessarily Christian. We have taken our culture and we've made adaptations to practice our faith in a certain way. But Paul said, to the Jews, I was a Jew. To the Gentiles, to the Greeks, I became a Greek.
Hudson Taylor became the greatest of missionaries when he went to China, and he actually started growing a ponytail.
Right. I have a friend who was a missionary for 18 years in Pakistan, dressed like a Pakistani, spoke Urdu fluently, lived his life in that culture. Well, there's one country near there where there are a lot of people becoming followers of Christ. There's no church at all in there. And in fact, they can't even build a church. So how do we help them, encourage them, strengthen them so that they can practice their faith and live out their faith in a way that will not bring undue attention to them? So one of the things we do was, they're used to praying 5 times a day. We know that it's not required in our faith to pray a certain number of times every day, but it's something they're comfortable with. So we give them an alternative form. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when they rise up in the morning, they have a prayer time. And then at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then when they go to bed at night. What about the Muslim festivals that they're used to? Can we give them alternatives that fit within the culture that don't make them
ostracized?
But also have meaning now as followers of Christ. I think those are the kinds of challenges that we face as a church that wants to strengthen Muslims who are followers of Christ.
Well, let's talk about that then, because in your final chapters of the book, Secret Believers, you do actually talk about 4 main things that followers of Jesus in other worlds can actually do to help these folks that are...
Right. Well, I think to summarize those, I think... When Brother Andrew started with writing God Smuggler and you went to the communist world, communism was over there. It was Eastern Europe. It was Russia. It was China. When it comes to Islam, they're living with us. They're moving here. So I think all of us have a part to play. And so we've given 4 challenges that I think every Christian can respond to. First one is, rather than hating Muslims, shouldn't we seek to win them to Christ? As I said to you earlier, Muslims seek to win me to Islam. Well, why don't I let them see Jesus in me? I don't approve of the movies and the television shows that so many Muslims look at and say those are Christian. Mm. Well, I know you and I know those aren't Christian. Mm. But how are they going to know what real Christianity is if they don't meet Christ in me? Be friends with them. Brother Andrew showed me that you can go to any Muslim and become a friend with him. He's gone to Hamas. He and I have gone together to Taliban. We've gone to Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, and we've been welcomed in every one of those situations. We've been able to sit down with them. We ask them to tell us about what they believe. We share openly what we believe as Christians. Well, anybody can do that. Mm. You can be a friend.
And you were welcomed. You were given an ear. You were heard.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, at the madrasa where Brother Andrew and I went in northwest Pakistan, twice now Brother Andrew's been invited to get up and speak. He opens his Bible, shares a few verses, tells a little of his testimony. He's spoken to as many as 400 Hamas leaders at one time, sharing the gospel. So no, the door is not closed. The problem is we don't think you can go. Brother Andrew says, spell Islam as I sincerely love all Muslims. Mm-hmm. That's what we should be doing as Christians. We should be known for our love. Mm-hmm. The second challenge, when we're attacked, rather than seeking revenge, let's offer forgiveness. That's the heart of Christianity. Number 3, and the one that challenges me the most, let's show them what real Christianity is by letting Jesus Christ live his life through us. Mm. I think the challenge from Islam is, do you really believe your faith? Do you really live it out? That should challenge me in everything that I do. That am I really letting Christ live through me, love through me.
Yes.
Number four, let's engage in the real spiritual warfare beginning on the battlefield of prayer. And the Christians from the Muslim world are more and more saying, please don't pray for us, please pray with us, because we're praying for a harvest. And when I mean harvest, I mean they want their Muslim neighbors to come and find Jesus like they have.
Mm.
And they know that if that happens, persecution actually may increase, but it's worth it. Are we willing to pray with them and enter into union with our brothers and sisters in the Muslim world and truly pray for the hearts of Muslims to come and find Jesus?
Four great challenges, really good challenges. Al Jensen's with us on Open House, theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast. I think we need to finish on, what do Muslims find so enamoring about Jesus when they choose to follow him? In the end, why do they shoulder all of this? What is so good about him?
You know, people have rejected Christianity. They don't reject Jesus. They love Jesus. When you see the miracles he does, one former imam has written a beautiful hymn where he writes about the miracles of Jesus, and then he goes on and in beautiful poetry describes all the miracles Jesus has done in his life, taking the hatred out of his heart and giving him love. You know, taking the rage out, giving him the peace that only Jesus can give. I talked with another Muslim who was going to be a suicide bomber, but found Jesus and realized, no, I want to give my life to Christ. I don't want to blow myself up and take people with me. I want them to. So the miracle is, I mean, how do you encapsulate the love of Christ that they find? It's Jesus himself. And unfortunately, Christians have often been a bad advertisement for the person of Christ. They don't reject Jesus. Over and over, they see that he gave himself for us. He sacrificed himself. On the cross, he stretched out his arms and said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. No one asked Jesus forgiveness when he was on the cross. He offered it. I think maybe that's the thing that floors Muslims. When you're attacked in Islam, you're supposed to exact revenge. And here's the God who became man, who was so unjustly and unfairly attacked and executed, and he offers forgiveness. That changes your life.
Shines brightly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And then it transforms their life. And so there is a physical, emotional, spiritual, there's a total person being transformed.
Absolutely. There. And that's the best. You know, my prayer is that every Muslim in the world will get to know one committed follower of Jesus, whether it's another Muslim who has fallen in love with Jesus or any Christian in whom Christ is allowed to really live.
May the challenge be for us, you
yes.
and me. Al, great to talk to you tonight.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, fascinating to talk to you, actually. Yeah, the book is called Secret Believers. It's published by Revel, or Hodder, between the UK and Australia. Secretbelievers.org is the website, or the Australian Open Doors website can point you in the right direction too, opendoors.org.au.
We hope you enjoy this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.